Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. What you are about to hear was originally recorded in 2010 as research for my book, Public Speaking Superpowers. After going through all this content, I've decided to release these 80-plus recordings as a bi-weekly podcast. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence, and today we are speaking with Nancy Daniels. She is a voice training, voice improvement, and public speaking solutions expert. Nancy, welcome to the call.
Thank you, Karma, and I'm delighted to be here with you.
Just so listeners can get a feel for your unique expertise, could you tell us a little bit about your journey to success in public speaking and why someone might want to listen to you?
Well, some years ago in graduate school, I was majoring in music composition because I wanted to work with Stephen Sondheim on Broadway. Of course, he didn't know that. That was my goal in life at that time. But it was interesting. I was taking a singing lesson. My professor told me that the pitch of my speaking voice was too high. And again, I'm talking speaking voice, not singing. She played a note on the piano, and then she went down about four whole steps and said, "This is where your optimum pitch is," meaning the original note she played was where my habitual voice was. And at that time, I realized immediately, oh my goodness, this lower pitch sounds a lot more authoritative. It's a warmer voice. It's a richer voice. And it got me the jobs I wanted in New York City when I eventually did move up to New York. So I then worked in New York for various businesses in the classical music industry, and then I moved to Canada, and I was approached by the University of Western Ontario to teach voice to their graduate students of journalism. Now, I didn't realize I had done something unusual at that stage until I read a book, and I saw, oh my goodness, what I did when I was in graduate school is exactly what this book is talking about, and from there, that's how I got into voice and really how I got into public speaking skills as well.
You know, that makes so much sense because one issue I've had with my own voice is that I sound very, very young because my voice tends to be a little high.
Higher pitch, and that's not uncommon, especially in the female voice. The difference is that right now I'm using my chest to power my sound. Most people use their throat or their vocal folds. They're pushing from this area, which is higher up, and you can certainly hear the difference in those two sounds.
Oh my, yes, definitely.
When that professor of singing said, "Look, this is where your real voice is," I automatically took it down to my chest because I had studied singing. I had majored in singing in college. I had learned to breathe in order to support my singing voice. Now, my singing voice was never that great, but I did learn that principle, and that's what I subconsciously applied in lowering the pitch of my voice, but it also afforded me the jobs I wanted when I eventually moved to New York City. I sounded more mature than I was. Had I not made that change, I'd be talking like this today, which is not pleasant for your ears or for my throat.
I bet, yes. Now, this kind of lends itself to the next question I'm going to ask, which is, do you believe that public speaking is a learned skill or something you are born being able to do?
Well, as far as public speaking, there may be a handful of naturals out there, but by and large, I don't believe that it's inherited to that degree. I think there's some differentiation here. If you like to talk, chances are you may be better at public speaking than the individual that is not comfortable talking to people. So we've got that distinction. But more so than that, I think much of it is practice. I really do. That you have to have the experience of getting up. In fact, I just read an email from someone that said he did not think that public speaking really was a fear, that deep down inside we're really not afraid to do public speaking. He's absolutely wrong. We're scared to death to do public speaking. It is man's greatest fear. And man's second greatest fear is dying, and man's third greatest fear is fear of dying while public speaking.
But I think probably what he was talking about is the root cause of the fear of public speaking is probably a fear of rejection or humiliation or something like that.
Absolutely. It is fear of forgetting.
Oh, yeah.
I have forgotten, and it's easily survived if you can just stop, look at your audience, admit that you have lost your train of thought, and I find when that happens, I automatically know where to go, automatically. A lot of my presentations, I do what I call winging it because I've done the same material for 20 years, and I'm throwing in different anecdotes with every audience, which is part of what I believe to be good public speaking if you're doing a presentation, not a speech. is a different animal. But if you're making that presentation, you have to be able to change it up, so to speak, according to your audience. What if your audience is not as enthusiastic as last week's audience? Well, what are you going to do to liven them up a bit? And that's being able to throw in a different anecdote, really even move your topic around a little bit.
Yeah, I think knowing your topic well enough to be able to go with the flow is so important. When I was competing in speech, one of the speeches I did was on memory, and believe it or not, I forgot it halfway through it. And luckily enough, I had done enough research on the topic that although for a brief moment there was a little bit of a stumbling as I realized I started a sentence and didn't know how to finish it, I was able to pick up where I knew I was supposed to be going and move on. But yeah, there really is two levels to giving a presentation. There's the knowledge of your topic as well as the knowledge of the structure you want to have.
Well, and that's true. And I think what a lot of people in public speaking do not appreciate is that you have to practice, and I call it rehearse. You must rehearse your material out loud. Just as the athlete has to practice the sport, just as the musician must practice his music, just as the actor must practice his lines, how can you possibly think you can give a presentation without practicing it? This is beyond my comprehension, and yet I can't tell you the number of clients that I'll work with that will know that they're going to be doing their presentation and tell me a week beforehand, oh, I haven't even done it yet. How can you not? That is part of public speaking.
Oh, yeah. And you need to both practice it in your mind as well as with your voice.
Absolutely. In both cases. And I do a lot of it when I'm in the shower. Or if I'm driving to my engagement, I will go over my opening, for instance. Now, I'm not going to do the entire presentation, but right. I'm going to change my opening again according to my topic, according to my audience, to whom right. am I speaking.
Right. It's much easier to do that if you have a smaller audience to really tailor your speech on the fly.
Well, and that's true in many, many cases. And yet I have found that there have been times, sometimes with a smaller audience, and it may depend on what we consider to be small, a lot of people are uncomfortable with that because they actually have to make more eye contact, which is so very important in public speaking. Yeah. I want you making eye contact with the audience. I want you treating your audience as if you were having a conversation in your living room. That is great public speaking.
Oh, definitely. As a person who listens to a lot of public speaking, I have to admit that when the speaker does that, makes me feel like I'm in their living room with them, I connect with them better, and I enjoy the presentation better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's one of the greatest pieces of advice people can take for public speaking and really work with that. A lot of, especially novice presenters, are under the impression that they have to be someone that they are not, when in fact, I want you to be yourself up there. And that's why I want it rehearsed, so that you know what you're going to be covering. You know your topic. You're comfortable with your material, so that you can make eye contact with that audience. Move your gaze throughout the room. Don't just stare at an object on a wall.
Right. So, if you were a public speaking superhero, what do you believe your superpowers would be and why?
I think it's showing the passion that you feel for your topic. And you have to absolutely believe in what you were talking about without a doubt. And you have to be able to look at that audience, even if you're getting negative feedback in some respects. If you believe in what you are saying, then that enthusiasm really will come through. But you have to allow it. A lot of people are passionate about their topic, but there is no emotional to their delivery. I want people to feel your emotion. I want them to feel your animation, your life, your, we call that color, that you speak with interest. I mean, you can have the greatest voice, you can have the greatest words, you can have the greatest topic, but if you don't have the passion, if it doesn't come through in your voice, in your facial expression, in your body language, then in truth, you're boring.
So it's the power to communicate your passion.
Yes.
That's an awesome power. Because, yeah, I agree that there are people who are very passionate but are afraid to share that because I believe it's because they feel vulnerable.
Oh, absolutely. Carmen, I must tell you, I had a lawyer once, and I knew this man previously through social engagements. And he phoned me one day. He was a real estate lawyer, and he absolutely stammered on the phone to me, telling me he could not make a presentation to 400 realtors that was coming up in a few days. Now, this man could stand in a courtroom. It's not a problem. But that is not the same thing, nor is teaching. or giving a lecture, the same thing as standing in front of an audience in which you're basically, you're not going to have verbal feedback except maybe some laughter when you are really in the spotlight in that sense. And when I worked with this gentleman, I said to him, he was so outgoing, so personable in the social situation. But when he did his presentation to me, he was so incredibly flat, monotone, no expression. And I said, Harris, I want you to do it again. And this time I want you to imagine that you're sitting at the dining room table with your wife, Donna, giving this presentation. And he said, that will not sound real. It will sound fake. And I said, no, you're going to have to trust me. So he did it. And I videotaped him. I played it back. And he said, oh, my goodness, that's normal. I said, that's right. That's what you want in public speaking, is normal, is natural.
Right. Because being a lawyer and presenting is so different from this other kind of presenting. So he was still trying to be a lawyer.
Yeah. And he wasn't going to allow anything to come through in that. And a lot of people, you'd be surprised how many people really have a lot of personality, very outgoing, but you put them in front of that lectern and they just clam up, they freeze up, or they start to speak and they're going too quickly. They basically have no control over what is coming out of their mouth.
Right. Now, I know you didn't mention this when I asked the question, but I highly suspect that one of your superpowers is also your voice.
It is, in my mind, aside from breathing, truly the most important thing that I think we're absolutely lacking, because most people, they hear themselves on their answering machine, number one, or their voicemail, and they don't like what they hear. And that's unfortunate, because what they're hearing on their voicemail is exactly how they're being recognized by the rest of the world. That's your vocal image, not what you hear in your head.
Yeah, because when you're listening to yourself, you're not only hearing what's coming out in the air, but what's resonating in your own skull.
The problem is, actually, let me take that a little bit further. You're hearing only what's happening inside your head. You're not hearing the sound that's leaving your mouth, the sound that is actually traveling through the air in sound waves. You're hearing distorted sound that is vibrating in the solid and the liquid of the brain. Now, when I work with a client, I will put them into a corner and have them speak directly into that corner, and then the voice will bounce off the walls and back past their outer ear, which is why DJs wear headphones, for instance. They are then hearing themselves exactly as their audience does.
Ah.
That's the reason for the headphones. And then they can fine-tune the voice or do whatever. Now, I want people to understand that your vocal image is 37% of the image you're projecting. And if you look fantastic, great, great story. Some years ago, Barbara Walters interviewed Kathleen Turner. And Walters was gushing over Kathleen's wonderful low voice. And Kathleen said, I don't understand. A woman will spend $5,000 on an outfit. Her hair and her makeup will be perfect. And then to talk in a voice like this. And she said, I don't understand why they don't realize the power of the voice is exciting as heck. And they are her exact words, because I'll never forget that. And it is so true. We form an image, certainly over the telephone, before we ever see that individual. And what we're hearing on the phone may have nothing to do with the image that we see. I couldn't believe this. I'm working with a man who, when he phoned me, I thought he was a 20-year-old, skinny, wimpy type of guy.
Yeah.
When he sent me his photo later, because his before and after change is magnificent. Ah, unbelievable. So he sent me his photo, and here is a very attractive man in his 40s who looked nothing like, as I call it, the before voice.
Right.
The voice that I had heard when he first phoned me. So, yes, I believe that the voice is an instrument. It's a tool, and so many people are unaware that it could be an asset. A lot of people, unfortunately, it's a liability. But in order to find that voice, I'm teaching my clients how to breathe with the support of the diaphragm, because the difference between this voice up here and the voice that's coming from my chest is that my lower, richer voice is only happening because I'm actually breathing with the support of my diaphragm. I'm using my chest to actually vibrate, to power, to amplify my voice.
Right. What advice would you give someone if they wanted to develop these two superpowers we've just been talking about?
Well, I think the first thing, they have to recognize that, yes, you must know your material, but you also need to practice. Not just practice your material. You must put yourself in situations in which you are speaking. Get in touch with your Rotary clubs, your Lions clubs, your women's groups, your men's groups, your business groups. Get involved and start talking. Get the experience of standing in front of an audience. Join Toastmasters. All of these avenues are wonderful. Also, there's networking involved there, which can certainly increase your chances of being hired, because early on, your engagements are going to more than likely be freebies. But
right.
Once you start to get established, you then will get real invitations. So I definitely think you must practice it. But also, I'm saying learn to breathe, because one of the great problems in public speaking is breathlessness. We get up there, and number one, we never think to breathe when we're up there. But yeah. We're always running out of what we don't have. I'm saying learn to breathe properly to support your sound, but learn to breathe to control your nervousness, because shallow or lazy breathing, which is typical of the majority of the population, actually increases your stress. Therefore, if you approach the lectern and you're already nervous, your shallow breathing is only exacerbating it. Whereas if you can learn to breathe with that support, your nervousness then is going to work for you. I want you nervous. Absolutely. I think nervousness is excellent because it can take that presentation to heights you can't imagine. The secret, though, is controlling it. And that's what the breathing allows you to do.
And harnessing it.
Oh, absolutely, harnessing it. Running with it. Allowing it to work for you and not against you. So that really would be my advice to people that are interested in getting started in public speaking.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Nancy, for being a part of the Public Speaking Superpowers audio program.
You are most welcome. It has been delightful.
And this is Karma Spence signing off.
Because this was recorded a few years back, I've cut the speaker's contact information from the recording because it may have been out of date. If you would like to learn more about today's speaker, go to publicspeakingsuperpowers.com/featured speakers and click on her picture. I'm working to keep the information there as fresh as possible.